Perhaps Milan was truly yours, Alessandro, on those evenings at home in the house on Via Morone, when the children played blind man's bluff in the big red room, and Henriette, more the older sister in a way than the mother of your children, played the piano. There was Luigi Rossari, your companion on long daily walks through the streets of the city. There was Giulia, your mother, daughter of that Cesare Beccaria who taught Europe the principles of criminal justice. There was Giovanni Torti, Prince of Java, a lazy poet whom you had chosen as a tutor for your daughters Cristina and Sofia. There was Tommaso Grossi, a close friend who lived next door to your study on the ground floor of your house in the Island of Java, the paradise of idlers, of the Javan. You were so fond of him that during your journeys to Paris, you wrote him affectionate letters telling of your desire to return to the little downstairs room next to his, to sit in your worn but dignified armchair and listen to the verses of The Lombards on the First Crusade, the poem he was writing in those years, or to converse in your rounded, witty Milanese dialect, one elbow on the mantelpiece, fishing for a pinch of spicy tobacco from the cylindrical jar, the one Francesco Ayets put in your hand in the portrait he painted of you many years later. You were born in Milan, Alessandro, on Via San Damiano, the putative son of Pietro, a nobleman from Lecco, too old for the bulky Giulia in her 20s, brimming with life, averse to the marriage of appearances urged by the very family as a shield against the excesses of Giovanni, the youngest of the brothers. You remember nothing of that rented house. Your mother sent you to a nanny at Caleotto, the district that was the land of your childhood, and then, when you were barely 7, she vanished, after separating from Pietro. First London, then finally to Paris, in the home of Carlo Imbonati. In those tender years, you went from boarding school to boarding school, from Merate, closed up in a room to write verses, to Lugano, far from the political troubles. Francesco Lo Monaco published, in his Lives of Excellent Italians, your sonnet for the Life of Dante. You were 17 years old, and as you wrote in your self-portrait, you had brown hair, a high forehead, talkative eyes, and the desire to flee from the gloomy home of your father, surrounded by spinster aunts and a Monsignor uncle with a wen on his eye. Life gives. The mother who didn't see your childhood was the joy of your 20th year. In Paris, your restless and anti-clerical poet soul completed its upbringing thanks to Claude Fauriel and all the cultural circles you frequented with Giulia. Life takes away. Pietro died 2 years later, in 1807, leaving you as his universal heir. Maybe he gave you his name not only to put a stop to wagging tongues, maybe, in his way, he was fond of you. It was Giulia who introduced you to Henriette, daughter of a French Calvinist mother and a Swiss agnostic. The Blondels lived in the Porta Nuova district, on Via del Marino, at Palazzo Imbonati, demolished during your lifetime to make room for a theatre, Alessandro, which was also lost after the bombings of the war. On that square today stands a bronze monument by Francesco Barzaghi, with which Milan honoured you 10 years after your death, right in front of San Fedele, your family parish for years, where Enrico took first communion, where you liked to pray to the left of the altar, where you stumbled on the steps of the churchyard in your 80s, causing an injury that led to your passing. You were married at Palazzo Imbonati with a Calvinist ceremony. You never wanted to speak of your conversion in Paris, in the church of Saint-Roch, convinced you had lost your beloved Henriette, blonde, meek, gracious, the exact opposite of your mother in the rejoicing throng. It was God's grace, you confided many years later to Stefano Stampa, the son of your second wife. You were young, already with Giulietta, the firstborn in tow. You needed a roof over your heads. Even the beloved country residence at Brusuglio was no longer enough. Your domestic treasure chest was the house on Via Morone. It was here that Cristina was born, After Pietro, perhaps the best loved of your children, was already with you. Your first and only house in Milan, not inherited, not rented, yours. The center of your world, made of meticulous habits, obsessive rituals, barriers, banks, to channel your often overflowing neuroses. In the meantime, Goethe was familiarizing Europe with your sacred hymns. In the meantime, with your tragedies, you cast doubts on the authority of the Aristotelian unities. Those were fertile years. When the heart of the city became oppressive, you set off for Brusuglio, often on foot, in a countryside that already had overtones of Brianza, and today is in the midst of the metropolis. To cultivate step by step, as Carducci wrote, sowing cotton, planting black locust trees, searching for the nature of your childhood, the grape vines, the fruit trees. It was at Brusuglio that, having heard news of the death of Napoleon, you wrote without a pause, in less than 3 days, your 5th of May, with Henriette right behind you on the piano to encourage your inspiration. At Brusuglio you finished Adelchi, and there you wrote the first pages of Fermo and Lucia. In a study that seemed like a precise replica of the one on Via Morone, simple, monastic, packed with books and notebooks, the objective correlate of your spirit. You were a poet, a playwright. You frequented the most noble and worthy persons of the city. It was not enough for you. You knew there was a people that was being born, a nation that had to find a language to inhabit, just as one inhabits a territory. You spoke other languages. Yours was the Milanese of everyday affairs. Yours the French of intellectual speculation. But the Italy you hoped for needed a common tongue, where every word was the right word. Without mending, without synonyms that reached no conclusions. You knew the importance of words from your stuttering. I see the word, you said. It is there, but it does not want to come out of my mouth. You did not want a nation of stutterers. So you made yourself into a linguist, a philologist. You shouldered the burden of making Italian the language of all, not just the poet's laureate. What had been written had to be rewritten, rinsing the rags in the Arno. Finding, beyond the language, to say it with Delio Tessa, a colour, which perhaps is the green of the walls of your study, the same found in medieval libraries, reassuring, relaxing, a point of balance and reference for all those to come. You, who according to Carlo Emilio Gadda became the writer of writers, you knew that language, plot, truth had utilities as their purpose. There was a world to narrate, so you narrated your world, making your domestic topography the literary map of a nation. The landscape of Die Betrothed is that of your childhood, of your infancy at Caleotto. The lay of the shoreline, the distant views, everything combines to make this a country I would call one of the most beautiful in the world, you had written with modesty. The nostalgia for those places, now that you had sold the property in Lecco, your northward gaze from Brusuglio on those pure days when the Lombard sky is so beautiful when it is beautiful, so splendid, so peaceful, as similar to Renzo's nostalgia when, fleeing to Milan, having reached Greco, still a rural village then but now a stop on the subway line, he first raises his eyes to the silhouette of the Duomo, that urban mountain, and then looks back towards Monte Resegone. You had heard the story of Marianna de Leiva, who became Suor Gertrude, the nun of Monza, who knows how many times in the Blondel home, right in front of Palazzo Marino, where the unfortunate Marianna spent her youth. And you had crossed the Lazzaretto, where Renzo finds Lucia at the end of his journey, many times in your urban strolls, those you took to soothe your nerves and jotted down in your notes. because it was all still standing when you were alive. Only towards the end of your century did they decide to demolish it, to allow the progressive destiny of the city to lead to boundless growth. Today, all that remains of that immense urban quad are a few vestiges on Via San Gregorio, next to a building by Vico Magistretti, the Church of San Carlo as a traffic island, and four salvaged columns used to embellish the courtyard of Palazzo Luraschi on what was known in your novel as the Stradone di Loreto and is now called Corso Buenos Aires. Just as you made a city into a novel, here Ferdinando Luraschi set out to make a novel into architecture, placing 12 busts portraying the characters of your masterpiece in the niches of the courtyard. Life gives. Life takes away. Providence knew how to be cruel, acting in mysterious ways. You had had much, you had lost much. Your beloved Henriette at Christmas in 1833, your children in the cradle or in the prime of life, one after the other, even Teresa Borri, your second wife, did not survive you. You, head bowed, continue to revise your work, eternally dissatisfied. You had erected a monument more lasting than bronze. You had become a living monument in your own right. You were Don Lysander, senator of the realm, honorary citizen of Rome. Admirers, artists, and emperors came to visit you at Via Morone. After Garibaldi's visit, your San Pietro convinced you grant the impermeable facade on Piazza Belgioioso an image worthy of your prestige. The architect Andrea Boni created the front of a neo-Renaissance palace for you, in terracotta, with that historicist taste that was so in vogue in those years with the Bagatti-Valsecchi brothers. Now, that house resembled the grand old man of national literature you had become. No longer the youth that had bought it for himself and his family. Now you belonged to the city. You were a part of it, so much so that Milan adapted to you. In the cathedral, where bonfires once burned in the square, lit by rioters who were taking the bakeries by storm, your solemn funeral was held. Your body lay in state at Palazzo Marino, at San Marco, where Renzo too had arrived in his wanderings. Giuseppe Verdi conducted the Messa di Requiem in your memory, and what had been Corso di Porta Nuova took your name. Your body, Alessandro, now looms over the others in the Famedio, the temple of fame of the monumental cemetery. Your spirit lives on at Via Morone 1, the home of Italian literature.